Herzlich willkommen zu Saatkorn, deinem Podcast mit Inspiration für eine bessere Arbeitswelt. Hello everybody, this is the Saatkorn podcast with Gero Hesse speaking. So you here today will talk with an international guest. I really look forward to the talk. We've met like 1.5, perhaps 2 years ago, and he works on something truly inspiring and truly innovative. So I'm super happy to have him today here on the show. It's Ethan Bernstein. He's a human resources entrepreneur and advisor, and we'll talk about the Velocity Network Foundation. Welcome, Ethan. I'm super happy to have you here.
Thank you, Gero. It's an absolute pleasure to be here.
All right. So perhaps we can start with yourself. So your way into HR and also the founding story of the Velocity Network Foundation would be interesting.
Wonderful. Thanks. So I've spent my entire career in HR, spanning about 30 years. I started although I'm an engineer in training, I've always loved the people and organizational aspects of the business world, and started my career in large organizations at Intel, the semiconductor manufacturer, and Applied Materials, which is also in the semiconductor industry, in HR positions. And then moved to a consulting role where I spent 15 years helping organizations implement HR technologies and improve their HR processes. And that's actually where the idea behind Velocity Network Foundation came. Because in the years between around 2005 and 2020, we saw many global organizations really struggling to get more and more control of their data, right? We may remember that, you know, 20 years ago, 25 years ago, many companies didn't even know how many people they had around the world. Just even collecting the headcount was a challenge. But companies didn't find that as enough. They wanted much more than just knowing how many people they have. They wanted to know who's a good performer and who's less good, who are the successors. And as skills-based practices began to emerge, companies wanted to better deploy their workforce, you know, move people around, ensure that people are upskilled and reskilled as they need to change. So we saw more and more needs for better technologies, better data in companies. But on the other hand, at the same time, during those same 15, 20 years, actually people started moving much more frequently between companies. You know, our parents spent their entire life, my parents spent their entire life working for one company. Our generation, probably moved a few times, but the younger people coming into the workforce started changing jobs every year, 2 years, 3 years. So companies on one hand wanted to know their workforce much more, and at the same time found that they actually know less and less about their workforce because people are coming in and leaving so quickly that you had very little information about the people. And so new questions on how we create deep understanding of our workforce started to emerge. And we asked ourselves at some point, what would happen if a person was able to onboard into an organization and share an entire digital portfolio of everything that they know, everything they've done in a very rich way, right? Not just a resume with a few marketing stories, but really a deep, robust, and verifiable, trusted portfolio, not just a marketing story, but real information. And as I join a company, I decide to share some of that or all of that, my personal preference. And when I leave that company, I take more what experiences I gained, what skills I built, what learning I took, you know, from that company, and continue to build my portfolio so that I'm really not dependent on a single organization, but I'm actually building out my digital footprint. Like an artist would build their artist portfolio, my employment portfolio and skills throughout my lifetime. What would that look like for a person to own that, have total control over that, and be able to take it wherever they want? In a gig platform for full-time employees, as a consultant, right, in any format. And that's where the ideas behind the Velocity Network Foundation were born. We reached out to our friends at companies like SAP, Oracle, Cornerstone, UKG, the big HR tech companies, the big staffing companies like Randstad, the big background screening companies in the world. And we asked them, would you like to be able to solve this together? right? Would you see this problem of the trust in the data and the quality of the data you're managing? And would you like to collaborate around this? And they all said, we're seeing this problem more and more. And yes, we'd absolutely love to work together to do that. And that's how the Velocity Network Foundation was formed. It's a nonprofit organization with many of the larger HR technology and HR services companies working together to create the protocols, basically the trust layer, to enable individuals to own and control their own digital data throughout their careers.
I truly love this idea and this vision. And it's kind of funny because we have a joint friend and my colleague and also your colleague, Ingolf Tietz. And Ingolf and me, 25 years ago, we sat in Germany with a few other HR talent acquisition leaders and had also this vision. How could a world look like if everybody had his or her own personal key of your own data at the end of the day, and all the companies would use a similar keyhole? That was at that time the idea, and I see that, of course, in a very different form now, given that technology has completely changed and developed at velocity. So perhaps you can give us a little bit of technical background, but not too detailed, since we're talking here with the HR target group. How does that work? I mean, it's Web3, it's blockchain technology. It's also funny, during the last year or so, nobody talks about blockchain anymore because everybody's talking just about AI, but it's not gone, obviously. So please give us some background. How could that work?
Right. So first of all, it's not could, it actually works. And so it's not just a future aspiration. It's a real working solution with, over a million and a half credentials issued to over a million people. The idea is basically for non-technical people, and I'm not a technical person as clear as an HR person, it really is just a new format. So we've changed formats in the way we exchange data in HR, particularly in talent acquisition, already a few times, right? We've gone from, I actually faxed my first resumes to my first jobs, right? So we went from sending letters to faxing resumes, to sending emails, and now maybe to attaching a LinkedIn profile. So it's just different formats, right? From paper to faxes to email attachments to a LinkedIn HTML page. Velocity Network uses a new kind of format called a verifiable credential. It's verifiable credential is actually a technical format, but all it is really a new kind of, like, think about an email format or a PDF, right? Those are different ways of communicating data or information. It's just a new format. But what's different about this format is it enables an individual to hold their data in a way that's immutable. In other words, they can't change it. Once it's been given to you, you can't change it, which ensures trust, right? And it's also using Web3 technology or blockchain technology also ensures that no single body can change it or has control over it. So the reason to use Web3 or blockchain technology is to ensure that there's no central system, right? We don't want a Google holding all the data of all the people in the world or a Microsoft holding all the data. We want the individual to actually be the one holding that format, but ensuring that it actually entrusts complete trust in it, right? And anyone I share it with can know for sure that that data was issued to that person and I didn't get a credential and give it to my friend, right? It's actually my degree or my work experience or my license, and that it hasn't been changed. I haven't in any way gone into that credential and changed my degree or my score or the years of employment, right? And that's basically what this technology enables. The experience from a user perspective is just a digital wallet. So we're all using Apple. Many people are using Apple Wallet or Google Wallet. And think about getting your boarding pass instead of in as a piece of paper. You get your boarding pass into your phone, right? And you can share that and people can trust that. Think about getting your employment history and your education degree and your professional license and the training you took into your digital wallet. That's the user experience. Nobody knows how that works, right? You don't think about, wait a minute, how does Apple actually do that? It works. It's a simple experience. I get my boarding pass. It goes into my phone. I show it when I check in. It works, right? The same thing is true with verifiable credentials. There is a very complex technical arena behind the scenes, but at the front end, from a user experience, it's just I get a new format, store it on my phone, and share it with whoever I want to.
I think this idea is super clever. So if we talk about the separate entities that are involved. So you have the primary sources that could be employers, it could be school, could be universities that issue a certain license, a certain document. And you get it in your phone and you can show it then to parties where you are going to apply. And so this is great. And the underlying technology is just what you described. So exactly. That's fairly simple at the end of the day, although the technology behind is complex. From a German point of view, and we had this discussion 1.5 years ago, I felt at that point in time, yes, but how important are really true credentials? And I have to say that during the last 1.5 years, they became more and more important. Why is that? That's because AI makes it super easy to apply. And now looking at the US, we face an increase by 250% of applications. So obviously, there will be a lot of applications where you don't know, can you trust this data? And I guess the same thing goes in certain areas of the job market also for Germany. So how is your perspective on that? And perhaps you can give us also a regional outlook where Velocity Network Foundation already operates in large scale.
Perfect. So your point, Giro, about AI is absolutely correct. So When we started this work, we saw that there are a few populations, even before AI, they were really struggling and needed this more than others. So some markets, like I've heard in Germany, there was a lot of trust. There wasn't really an issue of trust. For instance, as far as I understand, there has never been a very robust background screening industry in Germany, right?
And for the most roles, there might
right,
be
certain, for most positions and so on. Yes. In the US, for instance, there's always been an enormous challenge of trust, right? And so traditionally in industries and in countries where there was already a lot of need to verify what people were saying about themselves, that's where Velocity started quickly, because that was where, instead of spending 2 or 3 or 4 weeks making phone calls, checking the validity of data and so on, you could digitally verify the same information in a second at a fraction of the cost. So the places where there were less common trust, there were more trust issues, and anyway, background screening was very applied, was important. We saw that particularly in many places around the world in regulated industries. So regulated industries traditionally needed to do more verification than non-regulated industries. Healthcare, banking, education. So who is teaching your children, right? As with working with children. Gas and oil because of safety issues, right? There were industries where there was a lot more robust verification, and those are exactly the places where we saw the first uptake for verifiable credentials in the Velocity network. What is very interesting is exactly what you said about AI. So as AI has become much more used by candidates, by individuals, right, a few things happen. One, it's much easier to apply. As you said, you're getting 250% more applications. So that creates a whole new problem. But at the same time, of many more applications, we're also seeing an incredible increase in credential and identity fraud. So that ranges everywhere from it's not even a real person, right? It's a bot. And we're seeing from all around the world, you know, North Korean bots applying for jobs. That's an extreme, but we are seeing a lot more of that through people using other people's identity, right? And that's why countries are trying to lock down more right to work issues, basic identity. We want to make sure the person actually applying for the job is the person who has a right to have that work and is in the country they claim to be in. And through, you know, just claiming that I have a degree when I don't have that, claiming that I have skills and experiences I don't have, right? Just all the, across this whole range, so much more there problems. And there's actually a really interesting research that came out a few months ago by two professors in the US who showed that the AI has caused a challenge of separating the signal from the noise in talent acquisition. They actually showed that in the past, great candidates, you know, would invest time writing a specific resume or cover letter to the employer based on what that employer was and what they were looking for. And you could tell the difference between a great resume and a poor resume. Right now, everyone who uses a good LLM and knows how to write two lines of a prompt can deliver a perfect resume that looks great, that completely aligns with the job description. And companies are struggling to differentiate the really good people from the poor people. And that is a real challenge. And that's why many markets are starting to look at how do we do that? How do we identify the truth and the facts and verifiable credentials are getting a whole new population of organizations and countries that are looking for this.
Now, that's great. Let's talk a little bit about the regions and countries. When we talked first, it was the US, obviously, the Netherlands, Poland, India. Those were some countries, regions that already gained a certain momentum given what Velocity Network Foundation is doing. So where are you staying right now?
So those core locations you mentioned are still the where we're seeing the most momentum. We do already have people with credentials in over 170 countries and territories. So almost everywhere. We don't have anyone in Greenland. So either the Danish or the Americans need to help us with that. No one in Cuba or Iran. You know, some places not. We don't yet have anyone. But pretty much everywhere else in the world, we've shown that it is possible. It doesn't mean there's a lot of adoption. The places that you mentioned are really where we're seeing the most amount of adoption. And we'll talk, I'm sure, in a second about the challenges of adoption. But it's U.S. and particularly healthcare in the United States. That's a classic regulated industry with many challenges that verifiable credentials are really helpful. Our first state government in the U.S. is the state of Arkansas that has decided to build its infrastructure for its workforce on the Velocity Network. So it's also working with governments now to make that happen. You mentioned the Netherlands and the Dutch banks, a lot in the IT industry in India. You didn't mention, for instance, Colombia in Latin America. There's a lot of adoption. And recently, the city of Cali, one of the biggest cities in Central America, has decided to build its infrastructure on Velocity. So there's a lot of things happening all around the world. And it's really up to our members, we're a community, to decide where they see the need and the opportunity to adopt. But that's always very interesting to see how it's taking different colors in different places in the world.
So that would be exactly the next question in terms of rolling out this idea. Obviously, yeah, talking a lot about the idea is one thing, but then you have obviously lots of organizations that already are associated with you. But what's your plan to move faster and to get more companies, but also countries on board?
Absolutely. So this is the challenge, and that really is the challenge, because moving, although we've moved across different formats, as I've said already, in our lifetime, changing a format is a big effort, right? It really requires the industry to move in a certain direction. And we call this the chicken, egg, and rooster problem. It's the chicken, egg, and rooster problem because it actually has three sides, right? We need to get issuers issuing organizations who are the ones who are giving people the credentials. We need to get a lot of those on board. We need to get individuals to actually get their credentials and use them. And we need organizations that are called relying parties, receivers of those credentials, to receive those. And until you get enough of all three, nothing happens, right? There's no value if they're only issuers, but no one is getting the credentials as individuals. There's no value if individuals have lots of credentials, but they don't have anyone to share it with. So that's the chicken, egg, and rooster challenge. And it really is a big challenge. What we find is two things are the key to be successful. One is focusing on a specific ecosystem. And when I say ecosystem, it's an industry within a geography. And healthcare in the United States is a good example. When you look at a specific ecosystem, you can find who are the big players, the big employers, the important issuers, the important receivers, the systems that work in those ecosystems, and market specifically and push specifically to them. And people usually stay within a geography and an industry. So once you cover that, you create these atomic networks of people within that meet that. So we're very focused on building collaborative ecosystems together with the industry. So that's particularly great when you have an industry body. Like, for instance, in the United Kingdom, we're working with a recruitment and employment confederation. That is the staffing industry organization, right? And they basically work with their 3,000 staffing companies in the United Kingdom and collaborate with them. So with them pushing, that's when you get a whole industry working together to make it happen. So that's one key, is having collaborative efforts around ecosystems. The other key is where we met with Ingolf, is getting the systems to adopt, not going specifically to every employer or every education institution. That will take forever, but really working and get the systems to adopt. Because, for instance, SAP is one of the founding members of Velocity Network Foundation. When SAP SuccessFactors is fully integrated into Velocity, think about every employment record of every one of SAP's customers can be technically issued. Every learning that's done on SuccessFactors LMS can be issued, right? When ATSs, when applicant tracking systems are integrated, everyone can apply not only to one employer, but to every employer using that applicant tracking system or recruiting marketing system. And so we're very focused. You see, most of our members and most of our effort is on getting the systems of record, the LMSs, the student information systems, and so on, to adopt the Velocity Network. The combination of focus on an industry segment and on technology is where we see most of the opportunity for growth.
What makes me think, since I met you the first time, actually, so I have to ask this question right now. Did you talk to Microsoft? Did you talk to LinkedIn? I mean, for LinkedIn, it could be beneficial or deadly. I don't have really the answer to that. They have so much data about people in the working people that are currently working. So that could be interesting.
So we have spoken with both Microsoft and LinkedIn. What's interesting with LinkedIn is, I think, I don't know whether this is deployed in Germany, but you may see that in the US and some other markets, they have identity, right? They have this new thing that verifies identity. LinkedIn recognized themselves, and they said this publicly, that there's an issue with trust in LinkedIn, right? People can write anything they want. They have probably hundreds of millions of fake personas on LinkedIn. But even if you're looking for a candidate and sorting by LinkedIn data, that doesn't mean any of that information is truthful. So they do have a long-term project to improve trust in their data. And we're very much hoping that the Velocity protocols will be part of that. I see it as an opportunity for LinkedIn, not as a threat, for them to improve the quality and trust in their data.
I would agree, to be honest. And we did not talk yet about the Velo tokens, because that's also very interesting, because at the end of the day, there's a whole payment and ecosystem idea. So perhaps you can explain that to the listeners.
So very briefly, because if anyone here is not a crypto person, this could become a little bit complicated. But basically, when we started this, we recognize that, one, we need to build this in a sustainable way, right? And we're not a company, we're a community working in a distributed solution. So how do you create a sustainable solution that's distributed and drives adoption? So how do we create incentive for organizations to participate in the network, to issue their credentials? And so the initial thinking was all around, how do we incentivize the right behaviors? And a lot of thinking within our community, what is the right behavior? So one decision we made very early is individuals we believe should not have to ever pay for their own data. That's very aligned with GDPR and European thinking about data sovereignty. The Americans don't agree, by the way, but it definitely is aligned with our philosophy that it's the individual's data. They shouldn't need to pay to receive it, to hold it, or to share it. So they're not participating in the economy. But what behavior do we want to incentivize? What we want to do is incentivize organizations to issue credentials to individuals. Now, the foundation doesn't have any money. So how do we incentivize an organization to issue credentials when we don't have $1 billion or €1 billion to give organizations? Well, that's why we created a token. Basically, the foundation is the issuer of a token, which it rewards every issuer for issuing credentials. But then when an organization receives those credentials and wants to verify, leverage the trust elements of the network and verify the credentials, they pay in tokens. And it basically becomes a financial exchange between issuers who are rewarded and relying parties who are paying. They're paying much less than it would cost today to verify. So they save money. And the token is simply the economic tool to enable the network to function. That's basically a short way of explaining it.
And there's not many people who can explain complex things in a few sentences, but you belong to them. So that's
thank
great.
You. Thank you.
All right. So I'm really, I am inspired by the whole velocity idea. Given the fact that we're almost at the end of the podcast, at first, I want to thank you very much that you took time to talk to me about this great idea. And I keep my fingers crossed that the future is bright ahead for Velocity Network Foundation. My last question regarding you would be, what inspired you, having a look at how the future of work unfolds every day?
Thank you. So, you know, when we started this, it was really, as I mentioned, mostly very much business oriented, very much looking at friction that companies experience. And then I discovered this movement of self-sovereign identity and the idea that individuals should own the data. We didn't start this work because of that or thinking about the individual at the center. We actually thought about this as a business problem. But discovering this idea of self-sovereign identity, of individual ownership in a world that's becoming extremely complex, and now geopolitics is such a mess, and we have so many people who don't have enough opportunity, and so many migrants who lose their ability to work at the level of their skills because they can't prove who they are and what they've done, right? That has really been the inspiration behind this. It's not just solving a business problem. It's addressing a human challenge and giving people more opportunity. That really, although it's not where we started, was this aha moment of discovering the best solution to the business problem is actually one that also empowers individuals and gives them real control over their lives, their data, their careers, their work. And that is what excites me to make that happen.
Well, I completely understand. It's a huge idea. So, yeah, as I said before, good luck. And where I can help, I will help. So, thanks.
Thank you very much.
So, das war diese Saatkorn-Podcast-Episode. Ich hoffe, dir hat Spaß gemacht und sie hat dir gefallen. Bevor ich jetzt hier rausgehe, noch ein kleiner Tipp für dich. Abonniere doch kostenlos meinen Saatkorn-Newsletter. Dann gibt es jeden Sonntag alle Podcasts, alle News, alle Artikel, alle Verlosungen, alles, was ich auf Saatkorn so mache, gratis in dein Mailpostfach und du hast bequem alles an einem Ort und verpasst nichts mehr. Das Ganze kostet, wie gesagt, nichts. Den Link zum Abo gibt's in den Shownotes. Würde mich freuen, wenn wir uns da wieder treffen. Ganz lieben Dank und bis bald. Ciao.